We are now just a little less than 2 weeks away from our annual singing on August the 4th. So I hope you're marking that down in your schedule, making plans to be here for that. It was really cool last year to finally have it normal again, post-COVID, and a full house for the singing. It was so encouraging, and so I hope all of you are making your plans to be present for that. And then the week after that, we're going to continue an annual event we began a couple of years ago with a special study on Saturday for our young people to help them get ready to go back to school. Phil Robertson is going to be back with us again. He's going to be leading some classes, and coincidentally chose the book of Philippians, from which to draw his theme. And I say coincidentally because beginning in August, we're going to be reading Paul's letter to the Philippians. So that worked out really, really well. If you've got kids that go to Teen Weekend, then we want you thinking about this event too, because it's designed for that age group. Going to have it at an offsite place this year, a new place. We'll be getting you some information right now this morning. Just sort of mark that date in your schedule. We want all of our young people to take advantage of that. And after those things, make your way to the book of Colossians, because that's where I want us to study this morning. Colossians chapter 4. I'm going to blame Randy for this, because last Sunday I sat and listened to Randy talking to us from the book of Colossians, and it inspired me. Randy, it's your fault this morning, brother. I thought, man, I need to keep going back there this week, and I need to do some more reading there. It's amazing to me as we make our way through the letters of Paul this year, and I hope you're doing that with us. I hope you're keeping up with the reading. Maybe the summer's been a little busy and you've fallen off. That's okay. You can jump right back on board and keep going with us. Because the interesting thing is, we have these letters that were written so long ago to people in circumstances so different than ours. And yet, think about the lesson we heard last week. The message of these letters is still relevant and useful, even to disciples all these years later. And someone says, why are you surprised by that, David? The Holy Spirit inspired the letters, and they were designed for that purpose, so that disciples for every age could read them and learn from them. And I thought Randy's lesson last week was a great illustration of that. And I thought, well, let's just keep on going, because there's still some great stuff in this letter. So I invite you to chapter 4. That's where we're going to work this morning, where there is just this terrible chapter break. I said that just to make you happy, Jeff. Jeff is teaching me to hate chapter breaks over the last 3 years I've been here. And this is one of them, isn't it? Let me show you why I say that. Pick up back in chapter 3 and verse 18. And I want you to notice what Paul has been working on. If you've been reading, you've already seen this, I suspect. Beginning in chapter 3 and verse 18, he talks about relationships, sort of like he does in the book of Ephesians. Colossians sounds like Ephesians at times. Notice in verse 18, he says something to wives, and then in 19, he says a little bit to husbands. Do you see that? And so he begins this segment by talking about marriage. But then in verse 20, he says something to children, and 21, he says something to fathers, and so he broadens out and now focuses on family as a whole, the parent-child relationship too. But then you get to verse 22, and he says something to slaves. In fact, he says a lot to slaves. That goes all the way to the end of chapter. But do you see, at least in my translation, the first word in chapter 4, do you see it? He says something in verse 1 to masters, slaves and masters. And you're thinking, those ought to go together. That's what I thought too. Why is the chapter break there, Jeff? That will be Jeff's sermons next week to explain why in the world you would break that up there, right? So he's talking about relationships. Just take that beginning of chapter 4 and tuck it back up in there in chapter 3. That's where it belongs. But then, beginning in verse 2 of chapter 4, he starts with these words, devote yourselves to prayer. And I don't know about you, but I read that and I'm inclined to think, okay, he's done with relationships. And now he's moving on to something different. In fact, a familiar topic of Paul. How many times in the letters does Paul say something to his audiences about the importance of prayer? He elevates that for us. And so I read chapter 4 and verse 2 at the beginning there, and I think, well, he's about to go on and talk about prayer. But that's just because we haven't read far enough. I want to submit to you that when we get into chapter 4, he's still talking about relationships. In fact, if you go on down to verse number five, let me give away the next relationship before we start talking about it. In verse 5, he says, conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders. And so I think this last segment on relationships actually continues into chapter 4 all the way down through verse number 6. The last relationship he wants to talk to us about is our relationship with people who are not Christians, our relationship with a lost world. And he'll finish that up and then conclude the letter with some of the kind of conclusion stuff he does. This morning, this is the segment I want us to think about. Because frankly, as Randy encouraged me to go back and do more reading and more thinking, it occurred to me how relevant this segment is for us, where he talks about our relationship with lost people. I think we need to think more about that. I think as the world grows more hostile to me and you as disciples, our view of the world has changing. I think it's easy to begin to see the world as the enemy and the need to isolate ourselves from them, and along the way forgetting that we have a calling, a mission to outsiders, to the lost world that is around us. They are not our enemies. They are our mission field. And so I want to stir you up to think with me about that this morning. Can I just challenge you with a question today? You know, I suspect that all of us pray regularly for other people. So will you look back on the last week? Can you think of people that you prayed for during the course of the last week? Can you get in your mind some names that were on your list that you brought before God and asked him to do things? Here's the question I want to challenge you with. How many people on your list that you prayed for this last week were lost people? And see, I think that's telling. As I thought back on that, I was embarrassed. I didn't do a lot of praying for lost people. And so I think this segment here at the end about our relationship with outsiders is needed and useful. So can I call your attention to three phrases right in the text that I think frame up for us what Paul wants to say to us, really what the Spirit wants to say to us about our relationship with outsiders. So I'm beginning in chapter 4 in verse number 2, and I want to call your attention to this phrase where he says first, devote yourselves to prayer. And as I said a minute ago, we think that begins a segment on prayer. It kind of sounds that way. He starts off by saying, we need to be devoted to prayer. Maybe your translation says, continue praying, and that's the idea. And boy, do we need that encouragement, right? Have you ever had a season of your life where you gave up on praying? I've had people say that to me before. I just stopped because it's not doing any good. Nothing's changing. I'm not getting the answer I wanted. And so they gave up on prayer. And so Paul opens with, keep on praying. Don't stop. And notice that next phrase, keeping alert in it. You know how you know a biblical phrase is challenging? you go and read the scholars and you find that they all say different kinds of things. And they say that about this phrase, keeping alerted. What exactly is Paul trying to say here? I think we kind of, when we study this text, we just kind of jump right over that. Be devoted to prayer and be thankful. We don't think much about keeping alert in it. So will you think about that phrase for a second with me? I read some different ideas about it, and contextually, what made the most sense to me is that he's urging us, as you keep praying, keep watching for God to answer. And when he does answer, be thankful. And I think those last two things are especially important to consider, because I don't think we're very good at those last two. We're really good at throwing stuff up to God, and then when we see some things that we feel like he didn't answer or answer in the way we wanted, we get disappointed with him. And maybe the problem is I didn't keep alert for the answers that he gave. This kind of sounds like a sermon about prayer, doesn't it? I could run with this for a while. There's some good stuff here. But Paul doesn't end there. He keeps going. So he says, devote yourself to prayer. But then notice in verse 3, he says, praying at the same time for us as well. And so he takes a big idea and he narrows it down a little bit, right? He said, what I want you to do is I want you to pray for me. And that's only fair, because he began the letter in chapter 1 and verse 3 by saying, I'm praying for you. And now the bookend on the other side is, I need you to be praying for me. And see, I want to run with that idea too, Jeff. Here's another sermon idea for you for next Sunday, okay? But I love this idea of us praying for each other. And not just doing it, but telling each other. Like Paul does here. I'm praying for you. I need you to pray for me. I think it's one of those things disciples do that binds us together. Pray for each other. Paul says, pray for me. But when he says, pray for me, he narrows his focus to something specific. Look back at verse number 3. He says, praying at the same time for us as well. This is what I want you to see. That God will open up to us a door for the word, so that we may speak forth the mystery of Christ, for which I've also been imprisoned, that I may make it clear in the way that I ought to speak. Now he narrows us down to this relationship that he wants us to think about. Notice he says, I'm thinking about my need to speak to outsiders. That's where he's going with this. And I think that's interesting. Because you notice at the end of verse 3, he mentions his imprisonment. I've done some work with guys in prison, and I can tell you, if I was in prison, I am afraid that's not what I would have been asking. I would have been asking, y'all pray for me that God will get me out of here, right? Or if not that, at least that God would comfort me and take care of me in this dangerous place. You will notice, Paul didn't ask for either of those things. He wants them to pray about his work in the gospel. And I think the reason that is so, folks, is that there is something for Paul that is of a higher priority than his personal freedom. Something that is more important than him, that is personal comfort. Bigger than all of that is the need for the gospel to be shared. Do you see that? I wonder, brothers and sisters, if our ministry to those outside is that high a priority to me and you. What do you think about that? And so there are two parts to this request. First of all, he wants the Colossians to pray that God will do something. Do you see that in verse 3? He wants the Colossians to pray that God will open doors. Now, there's another idea that you could really explore biblically. I thought about that a little bit this week, and I didn't realize how many times the New Testament talks about open doors, God opening doors, or God setting before you an open door. And usually that idea is that God has created an opportunity or put you in a place where you can go share the message with those outside. Underneath that is the fact that God doesn't leave us alone, brothers and sisters, to do this mission. Can I say that again? God doesn't leave us to ourselves. He promised to be with us and to help us. And I think it is odd that we don't call on him more. Over the years, I've talked to lots and lots of disciples who've said something like this to me, and I've been there too. They have some person in their life that they want to share Christ with. Maybe a coworker or someone next door to them, or maybe someone in their family. And they would say something like, I really, really want to share Christ with them, but you know, it never comes up. There never seems to be an opportunity to go there. And now I wonder, how many times are our prayers loaded with pleading? God, help me. I need a door. Maybe we ought to be praying that, like every single day. Open a door in the life of this person I want to reach. In fact, maybe we should do what Paul's doing here and ask other people to do that. Let's load up the elders today. You guys, when you need a door, shoot an email off to the elders and say, next time you're together, this is the name of my neighbor. Would all of you shepherds lift him up and pray for an open door so that I could talk to them? How about that? Our guys would love to offer that prayer for you. But we're not done, because there's a second part to this request. Do you see it up there? They pray, or Paul wants them to pray, that God will open a door so that we may speak. Don't miss that. Paul is not asking, hey, pray God will take care of these lost people, right? He's saying, open a door so I can go to them, that I may speak. It is not, prayer is not a way to get God to work instead of us. It is a way for God to work with us. In fact, brothers and sisters, in evangelism, there is this beautiful partnership that exists between us and our God. Do you think about that? He lets us work with him in ministering to the outsiders. He said, you pray for me to open doors, and then my task is to have the courage to go and speak. Do you see it? So here's the first takeaway this morning from the text. We need to be praying. We need to be praying for outsiders. Continue praying for outsiders. And as we do, watch. Watch for God to open the door. And when he does, give thanks. I need to press on because there's more to be seen. I want to point you to verse number 5, and I want you to notice this phrase. Second, he says to us, conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders. So notice the transition. In 2 and 3 and 4, he's talking to us about our prayers. In 5, he talks to us about our conduct, and he urges us to be careful, to be wise, as we get out there in our circle and we interact with people who are lost. Now that seems kind of odd to me because we're supposed to be wise all the time, right? If you go back to chapter 1 of Colossians and verse number 9, he tells us to be filled with a knowledge of God's will so that we can walk in a manner worthy of the Lord. I'm supposed to be wise all of the time. And yet he gets here to the end of the letter and he says, when you are interacting with outsiders, be especially careful. I think that begins with seeing outsiders as Jesus saw them. They are not our enemies. They are victims, ensnared by the adversary. They are lost souls that need to be rescued. Brothers and sisters, that is the most important thing about outsiders. And I think we need to learn to see people on that level. They are not co-workers. They're not waiters at the restaurant. They're not slow drivers in the left lane on Luetta. They are lost people. facing a terrible fate and in desperate need of rescue. I need to see people at their most important level. And then what Paul's admonishing us here to do is when I find myself among them, to be sure that my light is shining brightly. And I want you to hear the language there of Matthew 5 and verse 14. You are the light of the world, Jesus said. And in verse 16, let your light shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. I want them to see Jesus in me. And do you see the reason why, looking at the end of verse 5? Because we want to make the most of every opportunity that we have to speak to them about the mystery, to speak to them about Jesus. I want to seize every door and make the greatest possible use of it. I don't want to do anything as I interact with lost people that creates a conflict between my claim to follow Jesus and the conduct that I'm living before them. You've seen that, right? You've had that issue where someone talked about being a follower of Jesus and you thought, well, that didn't look like Jesus' behavior at all. And it makes it difficult to hear the message. It becomes an obstacle. I don't want to do anything that unnecessarily becomes an obstacle to someone hearing the gospel. Because brothers and sisters, you don't ever know. As we make our way day by day through this life, we don't ever know where God is suddenly going to throw open a door. And there's going to be an opportunity. Start talking to someone about Jesus. Maybe helping them begin a journey that will make a difference eternally for them. Moments like this are precious and valuable. In the case of some of the people that we love and care about, they are rare. So when they come, I need to use them. And so here's a second takeaway this morning. As I interact with lost people out there, I really need to think about my conduct. Do they see Christ in me? I really should press on, but I do want to say one more thing that some of you may be unhappy with me about, but it needs desperately to be said. There is a specific area where God's people really need to show more wisdom, and I want to shine a light on that this morning. I want to challenge you to think with me about it. When you and I post on social media, what we say will be seen by a very diverse crowd. Have you ever thought about that? I think about my friends on social media. All of my family is connected to me that way. All three of my sisters, their husbands, my sons, their wives, all of my nieces and nephews who are old enough to be on social media, they are all connected to me. Is it that way with you? Is all of your family on there? And it isn't just my family. It's this family. Lots of you are connected with me and can see the things that I post on social media. And it isn't just this church, it's other churches that I preached for in the past. And it's, listen, I go to a gospel meeting and inevitably about five people that I may never see again think it's important for us to be in contact with each other every day through social media. And so I get friend requests from people all over the country. I've got some connections that way. Maybe you do too. So lots of people in other places see the things that I post. And maybe you're like me, my coworkers are connected to me on social media. Now that isn't real relevant because Jeff doesn't ever pay any attention to anything on social media, but Hunter does. I don't even know if Randy is on social media. That's a really interesting question to ponder this morning. Maybe your coworkers are connected with you that way too. And I have some people that I was friends with in high school who for some reason I haven't seen them in many years, but they think we need to be connected together that way. And so they see things I post too. How about you? How many outsiders see what you post? Here's my question. I really want you to think with me about this. Do I take into account how the words I post will be seen by everybody in my collection of friends? I could leave that hanging, but that wouldn't be any fun at all, would it? Will you look back at your last political rant? How does everybody in your friend group hear that? Because I've got to tell you, my collection of friends on social media is politically diverse. I've got Republican friends. I've got Democratic friends. And I have friends, I don't know what to say about them, Jeff. They're politically unhinged and a little nutty, to be honest with you. Yeah, you got some of them too, I know. How do they hear that? How does it sound to them? How does the meme that I post, the funny meme to me, about some new folly connected with the transgender movement that popped up on someone else's feed and I share it on my feed because there is a lot of folly associated with the transgender movement. And so it's an opportunity to sort of ridicule and make fun of that. How does that funny meme sound to the parents of a child who is transitioning? Because I have some friends on my list whose children are transitioning. I wonder if it's funny to them. The nature of social media is not helpful to us. It's easy to read carelessly. I've wanted to text some people because I don't post and say, you need to go back and read the original post because your comment clearly indicates you didn't read it. You just looked at the title and started talking, which is foolish. And it's so easy to post impulsively in anger or frustration without carefully considering how others will see my words. And so this is the thing I wanted to say to all of us this morning. It would be really sad if something I carelessly posted impulsively because I was angry or frustrated became an obstacle to a future conversation about the Lord. Hear me on this. The conversation about the Lord is always the more important conversation. Conduct yourself with wisdom toward outsiders. We have an election coming up. We need to be wise. Moving on. Verse 6, last phrase. Let your speech always be with grace. And so we've gone from prayers, now conduct, now speech. And the instruction is that our words are always to be gracious. And so one of the ideas that I think is packed into verse 6 is this. It isn't just what we say, right? It's also how we say it. I don't want to just say the right things. I want to say the right things well. And we all know that in conversations about spiritual things, it does not always go that way. Sometimes conversations kind of heat up and people get angry and upset and it turns into, from a conversation into some kind of a verbal battlefield with rocks being thrown back and forth at each other and not very constructive. So I want to point out in this phrase that I've highlighted, I want to point out the word always. Do you see that? We need to soak on that one for a little bit. My words are always to be with grace. In fact, what I need to do is I need to say what is fitting. My goal in these conversations with outsiders needs to be to take this unique opportunity with this unique person in this unique setting and just to say what is needed right at that moment, just the right thing. So I went by on Friday, and Matt and I sat down and talked about this text. And we agreed that a food metaphor would work really well here. And I know Randy loves food metaphors, so I'm just feeding this one to you this morning. It's kind of like guys who do brisket, right? Y'all all smiled when I said brisket. What is that about? It's like guys who do brisket and know exactly how to prep the rub so that when it's done, the flavor is just right. They put a little of that, a little of this, they mix it together, they do it just right. It's processed for the right time periods in this place, then in that place, then it's smoked, everything just right. In fact, a good brisket guy will taste your brisket and he'll be all judgy at you and say, yeah, a little too much garlic in that, right? He knows. Just the right way to put it all together to make it perfect. You get the picture? Colossians 4, 6. When you talk to outsiders, say just the right thing. What is needed at that moment in just the right way. I hope you're sitting there saying, that sounds really hard, because after talking to Matt, that's exactly how I felt. It sounds like this is really hard to do, and it is. And I think that's the problem, folks. We just think communicating is this easy thing, and we start opening our mouths and going, and I hope what we're taking away today is, no, I need to stop. And I need to think about a couple of things. I think to do what verse 6 says, we really need to know our audience better. The outsiders. Where are they? Where is their thinking? What are their questions? What are they going to challenge me with when I start having this conversation? I think we need to be, here's my word this morning, I want to drop in right here, I think it's important. I think we need to be more curious about these people. And so as a consequence of that, can I urge you that maybe the starting point here is to quit thinking about what I need to say in that moment, and maybe what I need to do is be quiet and listen to people. Maybe it's not a statement. Maybe it's a question. Tell me what you think about that and listen. Or how did you come to that conclusion? And listen. In fact, maybe the first conversation will be a little more than just listening to what they have to say. And when they're done, maybe we say, well, that's interesting. Can I think about that a little bit and talk to you again? So that we can speak with grace and make sure we say just the right thing. Can I suggest that sometimes I think we get this backwards and it's hurtful to us? I think our impulse is to think, what am I going to say when I get in these conversations? And I start saying before I even know. It's like seasoning your food before you taste it. How do you people do that? And then I need to prepare myself for those conversations that get heated. And I think that's going to happen to us because we have a culture that is hostile to what disciples believe. And so when they start getting a sense of what it is I believe and where it's going, sometimes conversations get heated. You've been part of those, right? What is my responsibility in times like that? It's what we've already said. Let your speech always soak on that word. Always be with grace. What if this other guy's being mean to me? What if he says hurtful and insulting things with me? Let your speech always be gracious, no matter what I'm getting from the other side. And so, third takeaway this morning. I need to think about what I say. I need to think about my words. In fact, thank you, Randy, for the encouragement. Keep thinking about Colossians. Reading chapter 4 just stirred me again to think about the relationship I have with lost people. It stirred me to think about my prayers. I need to pray more for them. Will y'all join me in thinking about that this week? How many lost people are on my list? And it stirred me to think about how I'm behaving before them. Am I alight. It stirred me to think about my social media behavior. I hope it will stir you to think about that too. Maybe delete some stuff. Some of us need to delete some stuff. And my words, always with grace, what's needed at the moment. You know why this matters, brothers and sisters? Because souls matter. You and I get to partner with God in the most important work that's happening on the face of the earth. Have you thought about that? Nothing is more important than helping people get to heaven. It's why we talk about our relationship with lost people. Interestingly, it is also why we have an invitation at the end of every gathering like this, because there's nothing more important than people going to heaven. And I don't know where you are with that today. We never know that. That's a mystery as we get up here and do this week after week after week. But in a crowd this size, it is possible. In fact, beyond that, it's likely that someone sitting here today knows. They know if the trumpet sounds. If today's the day, it is not going to be good for me. What a terrible burden to carry with you. And so the God through Christ offers you an opportunity to let it go. And that's what we want to encourage you to do today. Whether you've wandered away from the commitment you made to follow Jesus, or for the first time you need to decide that you're going to follow him. Let go of the burden. Let him take it away. Go away today confident about where things are with you and God. If we can help you with that, this song is designed to encourage you. Make your way down to the front right now. While we stand, while we sing together. Come right now.